Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, we're actually we're joined by LeBron again. We were able to pull him aside from his post-Christmas festivities. I'm really looking forward to asking him a couple questions. LeBron, first question, are we allowed to talk about Rajon Rondo at all? He left. He walked away. One day he'll actually come on here and answer a question. But, you know, do you think people... you had made the point, in all seriousness, about Vogel that... that maybe he had more power than was let on or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I just find it really hard to believe that Vogel is so incapable of picking up how obviously bad the Rondo minutes have been in clutch situations. That I find it hard to believe that he's looking at that, looking at the data, looking at all that, and still saying, you know what, we're going to throw him back out there.
Yeah, first off, that game was a gigantic kick in the balls.
It was.
Like, that's the most irritated and upset I've been by a regular season game in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Even more than opening night, definitely more than the Milwaukee game. But just there were so many self-inflicted wounds, mm-hmm. that Rondo being one of them, but far from the only. They had so many dumb turnovers,
yeah.
And just like they fell apart, man. They just
open
like
threes.
Mentally, yeah, wide open threes,
lemon and, like, booty all over the place.
So we're recording this on Thursday night. You'll hear this on Friday. I watched it again the second half.
Ooh.
Only on Christmas night. Merry Christmas, right? Like, because I'm sure, like. If you're,
I was just
like
walking around in the rain, so at least your night was productive.
When I didn't have any like content responsibilities, games like this, I'd be like, I'm not listening to the radio, sports talk radio. I'm not listening to ESPN. I'm not watching any sports media. So if you're listening to this podcast right now, thank you,
yeah.
Because I understand the place of like, I don't want to turn on any of this crap because it's just, yep, going to make me sad and mad. The Rondo stuff is like, I've got so much to say.
All right. Well, let's quickly tease how the show is going to go. We're going to basically talk about the game as much as we possibly can. At the very end here, there is a question here that a listener, I don't like calling them fans. I don't like calling you guys fans, but a listener of the show wrote in that is specifically of Pete. That I think we need to tackle here. We'll do that at the very, very end. Let's start, though, with Rondo. Because while, like, all of this can be true, right? Stupid turnovers, over-fouling, right? The dumb reach-in fouls to get them into the bonus late in the game was annoying. I wasn't thrilled with the whistle that was given on. I noticed, and this is going to come across as whining, and it's impossible for me to say this without sounding like a whiner, but the Clippers have a lot of reputation guys on both sides of the ball. So, like, mm-hmm. Beverly has a reputation as a physical defender, and he gets away with stuff that, mm-hmm. most other players don't get away with. And then on the other side of the ball, if there's a breeze that knocks Lou Williams just a little off course, that garners a whistle as well. And but even still, the Lakers should know that going in and know that they have to be more careful about the way that they reach and stuff. And I thought Danny Green in particular really hurt the Lakers there. And then the wide open threes, I think it was Pickup Hoop threw together a quick, you know, 30-second
compilation
clip.
Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Of the seven or so threes that they missed down the stretch. And a lot of them were great looks. So this isn't me saying that all the loss is all on Rajon Rondo. He wasn't
not at
in,
all.
Yeah, he wasn't in the game when they gave up the 15-point lead, right?
There's, so, like, it's decision-making mistakes,
yeah.
Rather than, like, that was a bad idea versus the Lakers just crapped the bed at the end, right?
Yeah.
Like, but you're going to miss shots. There are going to be times, mm-hmm. where you miss shots. I was really upset last night. My girlfriend, Jeannie, was like, have they been caught from behind like that in a game yet this season? And I was like, huh, I guess not. I guess that was the first time,
mm-hmm.
where they've had, like, a lead of any note where they kind of came from ahead to lose. Right. They have. But they've always, like, those games where they built, like Orlando, they built up a big lead. And I think Orlando tied it. San Antonio, that happened too. They've always come out and won those games. It's losing that game to friggin' that team.
On that stage. Yeah.
On that stage, like, are you kidding me? The way that they did, right? Yeah. The thing that, bothered me more than anything, I'll get to Rondo in a second, but the Clippers, so what I was going to say about the rewatch that I did on Christmas night.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
The Clippers' body language at the end of that made me want to throw up.
Yeah.
Because they were smiling and high-fiving. They knew they'd gotten away with one. They didn't deserve to win that game.
Yeah.
We just handed it.
It was very overcompensatory.
Yes. We handed them that game. But the thing that made me really pissed off is they think that we're soft. I can see it in, and maybe I'm wrong. I would encourage, if you've got the stomach for it, go back and watch the second half of that game, especially, or the fourth quarter, the last, you know, 10 minutes or whatever of the game. They, like, they knew, and watch how many, like, just passes like the Lakers bobble. They were so rattled and shook, and that, like, that was the most concerning thing I've seen all year from oh, is this how y'all are going to react when you got some pressure put under on you, like, well, what does that mean in the playoffs? You know, and so I'm sorry, I'm pushing Rondo down the road, because for that specific game, like, he was just a part of the puzzle and not the biggest one. Right, it's just that games like this, games like opening night, games like Milwaukee illustrate the changes that need to be made in ways that our three different seven game winning streaks just can't. Right. We're still number one in the West.
Yeah.
It's just like those teams are not going to expose the weaknesses. We're trying to win a title. We're not trying to be the third best team in the NBA, which is what we are right now. So, like, yeah, in terms of Rondo, I know we'll get to that in a sec, but just the self-inflicted wounds and the way the Clippers were just like, yeah, y'all are, we totally rattled you guys, and I don't blame them.
You know what I thought summarized what you're talking about to a great extent? LeBron gets fouled with, like, under a minute to go or about a minute to go, goes to the free throw line. I think everybody in the building knew he was going to split those free throws.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
I think everybody knew. And I think the person who knew most obviously was LeBron. Because he makes his first free throw, and then he did that weird thing where he just pauses, and it's an extra second or two. And before he even shot it, as soon as he paused, I watched the game with my two brothers, the best man at my wedding. My dad was behind me. We were kind of off to the side in the house. You've been at the house that we were at the bar in the house. So we were over there. And LeBron does that, takes that extra pause, and it's like, oh, he's going to shit this one away. And it wasn't even close.
It's short. Yeah, it was short. Yeah.
He aimed it. He aimed it like crazy. And I thought, because again, one thing that we've talked about all year is the idea that the Lakers kind of take their walking orders, their marching orders from LeBron, and their energy level and even their confidence level. And I thought LeBron missing that free throw that way in that situation pretty much put, you know, was a nail in the coffin for one thing. And then it kind of tied a bow on the entirety of the shit fest that was that 6 minute stretch or so.
Yeah, it's, yeah, I don't want to make it bigger than it is, but it was disappointing.
I
kind of disagree.
I do think we got to make it a bigger deal. We circled it on our calendars. Like, this is kind of what happens when you.
No. I mean, just in terms of, well, no, you're right. This game mattered. It mattered.
It mattered. And the way that they lost it is a little extra something.
Like, that's the type of game. I mean, hell, man, I'm a fan. And like, I went to bed mad. I woke up mad this morning. Like, are you kidding me? It's like Christmas night. I'm like ranting to my loved ones, like, these effing idiots. Like, like, Merry Christmas, you SOBs.
My mother-in-law walks in. She's like, oh, so did you watch the Lakers? I was like, yeah, I fucking watched the Lakers.
Yeah.
What happened? Rajon Rondo happened. Let's take a quick second and we'll come back and talk about that.
So
So before we really dive into this Rajon Rondo thing, I want to read a stat. This is from @BJ_Meta, BJ Meta on there. He listed the players' net ratings in clutch situations, where it's the last 5 minutes of a game with the scoring differential under 5 points. Avery Bradley leads the way with a 50 net rating, though he has fewer minutes because he missed so much time. Kuzma's right there, but with the same disclaimer, he's missed some time too. He has a 30.6 net rating. Danny Green is there, which is kind of impressive given the number of minutes he has played, at 22.9. Anthony Davis, 17.8. JaVale is actually there at 15, though he hasn't gotten much opportunity. The only reason his is so high, I think, is because he plays depending on how well that game is going for him. Mm-hmm. Dwight Howard is at 11.8. LeBron James is at 10.2. Alex Caruso is at 8.1. KCP is at a 1.7. And coming at number 10, Rajon Rondo at a negative 40.7.
Yeah. Do you remember the lineup they had at the end of the first half? It was KCP,
okay.
Danny Green,
okay.
Kyle Kuzma, LeBron James, mm-hmm. and AD, right?
Yeah, they look good.
They were fantastic.
Yeah.
That lineup never saw the floor again. Are you mm-hmm. kidding me?
Mm-hmm.
You just saw it work. And now let's talk, why did it work? Did they just get hot? Yeah, that's part of it, but
conceptually, offense, it makes sense.
You put your three best shooters where you're not giving up a whole lot defensively. Like, it's not Quinn Cook and Troy Daniels, basically what I'm saying, right? You've got Danny Green and KCP are pluses on the defensive end. Kuzma is not a plus, but he has improved defensively and is not.
You could have one subpar defender out there.
Right, and that's true too. That's absolutely true too. So you've got the Clippers, we didn't make shots. As upset as how they crapped the bed and how they handled the last 5-6 minutes of the game, they just make a couple of freaking shots, the game is over. They shot 6-for-22 on mm-hmm. wide open threes. I if you watch the game, you don't need me to tell you, right? Like, they just missed open shots in a game that they lost by three that they had no business losing.
Mm-hmm.
And so the missed shots are particularly frustrating on 45 attempts, which is a season high, because they are open, because the Clippers are just sagging off into the paint.
Yeah.
Like, there are so many open threes
mm-hmm.
that it's just like you've got to make these. You can't, like, a lot of people were upset. You know, LeBron's got a size differential on Patrick Beverley or AD on a switch on this other guy. But, like, yeah, there are also three other guys in the mm-hmm. paint not respecting the shooters that we have around them. And that is what made the Rondo substitution so perplexing, is that they had something that worked really well against this team in the first half of the game. You don't even play a single minute of that. And the guy that you choose to go away from that four is Rajon Rondo?
Yeah.
And then what did Rajon Rondo do for you in those minutes? LeBron's going to have the ball for most mm-hmm. of the time in these moments. Like, Rondo had a couple of okay plays and a couple of not okay plays. He was whatever. But you've got, like, God, I'm working on video for Spectrum right now and doing this piece for The Athletic as well. So I've been too immersed in this game tape to have a good day today. There are, like, multiple possessions where Patrick Beverley is, like, 2 steps to the left of where he, closer to LeBron, cheating off of Rondo, who's off of the ball. Like, you brought Rondo in to do this?
Yeah.
Like, what?
Yeah. Well, that was the thing. So the NBA on TNT guys were talking right before you and I started recording, and they were talking about this game, and, you know, Shaq said, I believed in the Lakers heading into the season, but now I'm starting to lean Clippers, and then Kenny Smith said something similar like that, and Charles Barkley was saying that, you know, it's really frustrating to watch Anthony Davis because he spends so much time on the perimeter, and what they do is they make the final point without spending any time whatsoever diagnosing the problems that lead to that final point, right?
That's right.
And so, you know, with AD on the perimeter as an example, some of it is him. Some of it is both a on-court choice by him and also a conceptual choice by him in not wanting to play the five, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so when you have Dwight Howard out there and you have Anthony Davis out there, it's not like you can have Dwight at the three-point line.
Right.
Right. So AD, that there's one non-shooter out there that the defense can have a defender in the with one foot in the key the entire time AD has a ball or LeBron has a ball with Dwight out there. Then you have Rajon Rondo out there. And Patrick Beverley, it was comical. It really reminded me of how Kobe defended Rondo when the Lakers had success against the Big Three Celtics.
But Anthony, he's shooting 40% from three this year.
Well, see, the thing is, he was shooting 50%. He is now down to about 40%. So how do you think he's been shooting lately?
Well, it's also a matter of like him being wide open versus like the slightest contest.
Yeah.
Like if he doesn't have all day to look at the logo and set things, the seams up the way that he likes it and spin the ball in his palm just right, like that's, he's not going to make the shot.
Yeah.
And so that's the other part of it. Right. And like, like you said, the degree to which Beverly's playing off of him, like, in those closing lineups, if teams are going to pack the paint, all five players have to be somebody that you have to respect from 3-point line. Like Danny Green can, like, I'm learning more and more about Danny Green's game, like watching him on a day-to-day basis. Mm-hmm. He does, like, I'm trying to think a word that doesn't get me in trouble. It's like really boneheaded.
Yeah.
Mistakes, like really, like, what were you even thinking?
Yeah.
Type of mistakes that are frustrating. And he'll go like 0 for 12 just as easily as he'll go 8 for 12. Mm-hmm. And, but if Danny Green, who is crapping his pants,
although, to be completely honest, I would love to see a game where he shoots 12 3-pointers.
Well, he did have one against Milwaukee. He was 7 for 12 in that game.
Yeah. And he kept him in it. So do more games like that, please.
Well, for sure. But if, it doesn't matter like how crappy he's been playing. If Danny Green has a catch and shoot opportunity, you have to respect it. You are not leaving Danny Green so that you can help two steps into the paint on LeBron.
Right.
Right. Like, you have to respect him. You got to respect KCP. You got to respect Kyle Kuzma as shooters. Like, play that lineup.
This isn't difficult. This isn't difficult, man.
It worked in the first half. It's not some like blog boy conceptualization of, oh, you know, I think these lineups would work really well. And Frank Vogel should really give it a chance. You friggin' saw it in the first half. Yeah. It worked really well. We went up 12 points. They outscored them 17-5 in like 4 minutes of play. And we never saw it again. 17 points in 4 minutes. Think of how hard of a time we had scoring the rest of that game. And then that last 4 minutes, we put up 17 in 4 minutes because everybody could shoot. What are you doing? Why are you making this harder than it needs to be?
But this kind of gets back to my concern heading into the season. My number one concern, not even counting injuries, was Frank Vogel going to be allowed to coach this team? Because, look, gripes about NBA coaches aside, he's a smart one. There's just no way that he can look at how that game was going and think to himself, you know what we need more of out there? We need more Rondo. Like, that was just too conspicuous a mistake to be made to not have it be from somewhere else. Now, we can just claim it's Occam's razor and he just shat the bed in that moment. It's possible. But this is now four straight games where it's been the same thing that's got the Lakers into trouble. Late in the game where you have Rajon Rondo out there and the Lakers have trouble scoring because they don't use, even if you have Rondo out there, the one way you don't want to use him is as a corner shooter trying to stretch the defense, because nobody in their right mind is going to honor that guy.
Yes. Do you think that he could have played KCP over Rondo? Like, that's the place where I'm like, I don't know if this is true. Where, like, if it was Caruso, like, I could see it, right?
Mm-hmm.
That maybe doesn't have the credibility. But KCP is a clutch guy. KCP has been playing really well.
Mm-hmm.
And his play has warranted, like, nobody's going to be like, on the bench, is anyone going to be like, KCP instead of Rondo? Are you kidding me? Mm-hmm. The only reason KCP came into the game, because he came in for Danny Green.
Right.
Because Danny Green was doing that. And maybe, you know, but the decision was made even before then, right? Like, it'd be one thing if Danny Green was just awful, and then he was like, fine, I guess I'll put Rondo in. But Rondo was plan A.
Yeah.
I saw him walk to the bench, or to the scorer's table, when they had just tied the game, the Clippers had. And I'm like, this is your solution? This is your like, mm-hmm. oh crap, we need to turn this around, go to Rondo, put in the damn lineup that had just been whooping them in the first half. And, but yeah, man, just like the decision-making there to go to him, I'm dumbfounded by it. And I have been all day.
I mean, I'm going to get myself into some trouble on the next, in the next segment. So hang tight. So we are now year 17 into the LeBron James era. We are now about a year and a half into LeBron James in LA. One thing that I knew going into it, and then it has been made even more clear than maybe I thought it might be as an experience, was after games like this, or you can kind of predict the leaks that are going to come out after a game like this, right? The two leaks that came out from LeBron reporters were that Beverly kneeing LeBron in the crotch aggravated one of his injuries, a groin injury that we had never heard of to this point.
They mentioned that he'd had been having groin issues
before. Oh, yeah, you're right, yeah, you're right. So, but that, okay, so that was, he had 4 days rest and then that aggravated. So that was the one thing. And then the way that the spin on that was interesting and made me actually audibly laugh was that, you know, the Lakers are begging him to be smart about this and please sit LeBron, please, you know. So because LeBron has kind of talked himself into a corner with his stance on load management, right? And so it was funny the spin on that. And then the other LeBron report, reporter spin or article or column that came out after the game was the Lakers probably should sell high on Kyle Kuzma after this one game and turn him into a more ready-made player. This was after a game where Kyle Kuzma scored 25 points and LeBron looked visibly slower than the other top athletes out there on the court. Mm-hmm. My takeaway from both of those things, the injury one was clear. He has staked his claim on anti-load management island and now needs a ferry off of it because he needs to rest. It's the smart thing to do to rest him. And now the way that you frame that is, well, the organization and my teammates are begging me. It's just, it's a smart thing to do. So that made me laugh. But the Kuzma thing specifically was interesting to me because you're right. That was a lineup that should have been gone to at least at some point in the second half. And it wasn't. Mm-hmm. And the easy sub there was when you had Danny Green out there. I don't know if Danny Green and KCP were out there together at any point down the stretch. Were they?
No, they weren't. They
subbed in. They were like,
yeah, KCP came in for Danny Green.
Yeah. So, but the easy sub would have been to have KCP go in for Dwight while Green was still out there, and then bring in Kuzma for Rondo. That was the easy decision to make there. Mm-hmm. And I'm not positive that LeBron trusts Kuzma. So that to me, you talked about that KCP, it would make sense that he would go in there for Rondo. But he kept on going in for Danny Green. I think this feels a lot like the player that LeBron and AD trust most is Rondo, and I don't think they trust Kuzma as much as they trust Rondo, and thus we didn't see enough Kuzma until it was basically too late in that game.
Well, Kuz came in around the 3:30 mark of the fourth, so like they were still
felt in like it. The damage and was done though.
It, I mean, certainly momentum was very much on their side by that point, and he had no business. You know, I don't know if he's on a minutes limit. I haven't heard anything to mm-hmm. that degree, but yes, he should have played more, but he did. He did end up closing the game. It was, that said, the, you know, reports about Kuz and, you know, them, him being the, I mean, I don't know if that's observational or if that's,
well, it was definitely observational, but
yeah, like, is that coming from LeBron? Like, you know, right. Get me somebody else.
It was Joe Vardon of The Athletic. And Joe was with The Athletic Cleveland while LeBron was still out there. And then
he's got LeBron ties.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So, Even if it wasn't LeBron specifically, you know, that look, and this isn't, LeBron isn't the only player who does this, by the way.
Sure.
I just thought the timing of these, you know, the leaks and then the observational report or observational column was interesting to me, especially given how badly they needed that lineup back out there again, and it didn't get another shot.
Right, and Kuzma played well, man. Kept us great in that game in that first half, and he didn't get as many opportunities in the second half, but I thought he played well when he was there as well. So, yeah, man, it just... We talked about how we'd be finding out once everybody was healthy, kind of like the real pecking order of this team. We've found out, and that is real cause for concern, mm-hmm. because like I have a decently wide bandwidth of like acceptable decisions. Like I'll argue for something like, no, we should do it this way instead.
Yeah.
But for most things, I'm like, you know, I can understand the basketball argument for why the coach did this rather than that. And 7 times out of 10, they're right and I'm wrong. Right. Mm-hmm. This is one where I've been bothered by it so much because Rondo's appropriate role in the NBA today is as a third string point guard, mm-hmm. as a, you know, break glass in case of emergency, somebody gets hurt. Okay. We got to go to this guy. That is so far away from in the closing five in a game between two of the league's best teams, mm-hmm. that I'm concerned, like, how far Rondo would have to fall from grace, how long he would have to be bad to go from guy I trust in the closing five of a big game to where I think he belongs, which is as like your 11th guy.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's more reason for concern along those lines is that the schedule is going to lighten up. Like, this was the tough stretch that the Lakers are going to have. And then, you know, they aren't going to see the Clippers again for another month or so, right? And then Milwaukee, same kind of thing. They have a little bit of a break here. And in that time, the Lakers are probably going to play some sub-500 teams, and Rondo's going to look great. And this current fall from grace that he's currently on, where he very obviously doesn't fit in these situations, well, for a leadership group that wants to see Rondo succeed and doesn't want to see his flaws, well, that's the kind of stretch that makes me nervous. It's the successes, and this is where, and look, I get it. I am the guy who claims that the sky is falling more than most. And for those of you who are rolling your eyes in your cars right now, fine. But this is what makes me nervous, even while the Lakers succeed, and this is why process matters, is that Rondo is so painfully obvious a bad fit. Especially the way that he's used in those groups. And if they didn't notice it after these last four games, and look, maybe the next game that the Lakers go out and play, I think they play what? Dallas next?
Yeah. Oh, no, Portland. Portland on Saturday at Portland, and then
Dallas.
Dallas, right.
So maybe the next couple games, Rondo doesn't see the floor in the fourth quarter, and we get to be hunky-dory all over again. But as of right now, like you said, it's such an obvious misunderstanding of just very basic modern basketball tactics and strategy and math and geometry that to not see it, either something else is going on or we have serious concern about Frank Vogel as a basketball coach.
Let's play devil's advocate, all right, Anthony, because we do a lot on this topic of basically agreeing with each other and,
yeah, it's fair,
you know, increasing each other's levels of pissed offedness. So, like, what is the argument for Rondo? No, I'm not asking you to agree with it. What is Frank Vogel? Let's say it is Frank Vogel's decision, because I'm not so quick to absolve him from Vogel can't be possibly the one who's making this decision, right? Mm-hmm. So just play along, if you would. Like, if Frank Vogel is the catalyst for this, what is the argument? We've heard some of what he said of why he plays Rondo.
Yeah. He likes the fact that Rondo can carry the burden and get the Lakers into an offense, and LeBron doesn't have to carry that burden solely.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And look, I'll take it a step further and speak to why it might be Vogel who might be behind this after all. And that you and I have talked a lot about the fact that Vogel is this basketball nerd, right? And if there's a player he's going to identify with, it's probably going to be Rondo, right? So he's going to want to see that too. He's probably not very biased on this front with he's not unbiased. He's probably pretty biased with Rondo in that he sees a role that Rondo can, or a way that Rondo can help, and he identifies from a deeply basketball theoretical way, if not personification of the way Vogel thinks about the game with Rondo. So I think all of that is going on, and yeah, maybe I shouldn't fully absolve him of what's going on, but I think that's where he's coming from.
No, I think that's absolutely the case. My concern is that historically Vogel's teams have not been as great on offense. I think one of the things that we haven't talked about that kind of reared its ugly head yesterday is that we do not have a lot in the way of like X's and O's offensive guys mm-hmm. on the bench, whether it's Vogel or any of the assistants. I'm not sure who the offensive specialist is.
Yeah, it's a good point.
And I'm concerned about Vogel's conceptualization of what a point guard does. Mm-hmm. My brother Tom made a really good point when I was ranting about this yesterday during Christmas, was that the fact that the Lakers don't run a lot of set plays is probably detrimental to Rondo. We don't look at it from this perspective very often, but the Rondo, if nothing else at this point, he can run a set action and make the right delivery to, okay, option one's not open, but option two is, or option three, right? And so Rondo can do that. That's probably what he's best at in a point guardy type sense. In the absence of that, or in the presence of these very basic stagger screens or spin pick and rolls, or just these very basic type sets, the more basic it is, the less the system creates an open shot. And the less the system creates an open shot, the more you're reliant upon an individual player's talent to be the thing that creates the open shot. Rondo does not have that degree of talent anymore. My concern is that Frank Vogel is playing the reputation of Rajon Rondo mm-hmm. rather than the actual player that he is at this point.
No, I mean, that has to be the case.
Yeah.
Like, that absolutely has to be objectively the case because, and again, this kind of goes back to when you ask me to play devil's advocate as to why Rondo would be playing. It's not just from a utilitarian standpoint, but also an almost theologian perspective on it. Like, the mm-hmm. idea, the way that somebody at their core identifies with the game of basketball, Rondo probably exemplifies that to a certain extent, and that's not even just from the way that he plays basketball, but also if you're looking for guys across the roster that Vogel is probably closest with, mm-hmm. right? Just in terms of the conversations they have away from the game and about the game, after practice and whatever, right? I would imagine that. That Vogel identifies that closely with Rondo, and it makes it all the more difficult to make this potentially even more difficult, more complicated decision when you factor in potentially LeBron and AD vouching for him, right? Mm-hmm. So you add all of this together.
Yeah, that's quite a stew. Yeah,
it makes it really tough. So I'm not. Look, just laying out the problem and either not offering up a solution, which I do think, though, we have offered up the solution. That lineup was very clearly is probably going to be one of the better lineups on the year, right? The KCP, Green, Kuzma, LeBron AD lineup. That's probably going to be their best lineup right now. And so there's the potential solution. And then if you also just offer up the problem without identifying why the problem might exist, we're not excusing the problem, but explaining it more so, then you can fully, and that's to get back to the point that I made about the NBA and TNT guys, right? Is that, yeah, AD doesn't attack the paint because he looks in the paint while he's out there with Dwight and Rondo at the same time, and there's two extra defenders there in the paint. He knows he's probably either going to pick up a charge or a turnover or whatever, right? The chances mm-hmm. of that success is not going to be great. LeBron, right. Same kind of thing. So if the NBA and TNT guys, if Chuck and Shaq and Kenny are just going to say, well, I wish AD would go into the post more or spend more time on the interior of the offense, well, okay, there's the problem, but identify why it exists too. And in this mm-hmm. case, with Vogel making this call with Rondo, if you got to do all of those things. And And I do think it's pretty easy, though, to do all those things in this case.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we have two more things that we need to get to heading into the weekend, because we don't know if we're going to get updates on these things. Well, one thing specifically, how do you feel about Jeff Green? If it costs you like Troy Daniels or Quinn Cook.
I mean, Jeff Green is a guy I would want if the Lakers had to trade Kuzma in order to get the shot creator
mm-hmm.
that they'd like. So I'm
Yeah.
No. Yeah. Unless we're trading Kuzma, no, I don't see the need.
I think I've talked myself into Jeff Green, which somebody, I forget who it was, quote tweeted me with this, and I actually laughed. But they said, like, it's not a LeBron season until you've talked yourself into Jeff Green.
Yeah. I love it.
Fair. Fair point. But I've talked myself into it because I do think, so Danny Green is shooting noticeably worse than he did last year.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that does have something to do with the defensive burden that he's been carrying this year.
Huh.
And I like the idea of Jeff Green coming in and just spotting him with a few minutes, even if they share the floor together, spotting him with the type of guy that Green has had to guard all year so far, and potentially helping Green there, because Green is far too important to not have him in anything other than an absolutely optimized situation.
Whose minutes does he take?
Can I say Rondo's?
I mean, you can, but can we get Alex Caruso more than 11 minutes?
Yeah.
Too?
Well, that's the problem, is that he probably takes Caruso's or maybe a few of, well, I'd be fine with him taking some Avery Bradley minutes. I think I'm pretty much out on Bradley at this point.
Yeah.
Until he gets healthy or whatever. It was a cool opening to the season. It was a fun story for a little bit. But if you give Green, like, 5 or 6 of Bradley's minutes and then 5 or 6 of Rondo's minutes, then I think that's best case scenario for Jeff Green. I don't think he should be playing more than 10 minutes, honestly, for a team at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, he'd probably be an upgrade from, I don't know. Like, for me, if you're adding a new guy to the mix, because I do think they've got really good chemistry, right? And like, we'll see. It's always great when you're winning in a 4-game losing streak. Does your chemistry hold together? That's going to be one of the things that's going to be, especially if LeBron sits out. Is this a 5-6-game losing streak if LeBron doesn't play on Saturday or against Dallas? So, we'll see if that holds together, but when incorporating a new guy, like, that factors into it too, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I just don't think Jeff Green is all that much at this point.
Yeah. I just, for me, it's a position of need, and you have guys on the roster who aren't giving you anything.
Sure. So, like, why not give it a shot?
Yeah.
I kind of want to see, like, this is a long shot, but it doesn't require any movement.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of want to give THT a shot just to see what he looks like. It, like, again, long shot because he's a kid,
mm-hmm.
but the Lakers don't have many guys who can dribble, and THT can dribble, and he's got, you know, massive wing. He's got some defensive value with that wingspan. Mm-hmm. He's going to be doing a lot of stuff that's like, no, this is actually how you do it on the NBA level.
Yeah.
I'd just love to see a little of these middle months of the season. Do we have something at all with him? Like, mm-hmm. it might be worth checking out.
Yeah. I'm going to take you back to something we said heading into the season and say that if we were asking for or needed anything from THT, things went seriously wrong.
Yes, yes. That said, some young guys will emerge, right? Like, mm-hmm. Chetty Osman was a rookie that was contributing to those Cavs team. They lost in the finals, but like, it was like, oh, hey, we got this dude, right?
Yeah.
And so it's just the you know, need to play Rondo, the hey, we need somebody who can dribble. Like, why not, man? He's on a 2-way contract. Let's get him some run in some of these games. Again, a long shot, but if it's 10-1, 15-1 odds that he ends up working out, like, why not? Let's just see what we got.
Do you think Green has the pool to pull? Not pool. Do you think he owns a pool? do you think he has the pull to be able to outrank Rondo or take a few of his minutes? I think that
Danny,
no,
Jeff Green.
He's very close with LeBron.
To me, it's like an apples to oranges thing, because like Rondo is the only guy, going back to like the conceptualization mm-hmm. of the position by Vogel, like Rondo is a point guard, and yeah. he is the only other point guard on this team from a like run the offense type of sense. You get a greatly reduced Quinn Cook when you ask him to do that. And like same is true with Alex Crusoe. You get a greatly reduced version of him. So I don't think that Green would take minutes from Rondo, because Rondo's asked to do something that's so clearly different. It'd be like, yeah. does the cornerback take time away from the running back? Well, yeah. not really.
Yeah. I mean, the counter to that is, we'll stop asking Rondo to do that. In minutes that he shares with LeBron.
But what if Vogel feels like he needs somebody to do that? In the minute sharing with LeBron, but like, does that still necessitate mm-hmm. Rondo and the other 12 minutes per game where LeBron's on the bench?
Yeah. I don't think Caruso is worse at that than Rondo is. Rondo has been pretty terrible.
Yeah, the difference between like Rondo's pick and roll abilities at this point and even mostly his on ball abilities yeah. and Caruso's, like, Rondo's better at it, but it's not nearly worth the differences you get on the defensive end and in yeah. other aspects of the game.
Yeah. All right. Last question here before we head into the weekend. I like to have a little bit of fun here, especially after a tough game like this.
Yeah, man. I'm like all stressed out after this pod.
All right. You ready?
Mm hmm.
I can't find the specific question on here. Actually, I probably can. But somebody outlined a situation here where you would have to root for the Celtics.
Do we have to do this today?
Yeah, we do. It makes for good radio or podcast. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
So the Celtics are playing the team that is just above the Lakers in the Western Conference standings, and it's to get into the playoffs. And let's say it's this specific team, and they ran into some injuries and whatever, but they were finally fully healthy. They were on a crazy run to get back into it and would immediately become one of the most dangerous teams in the playoffs if they got into it, so you knew they could make some noise. But it required the Celtics beating the team ahead of the Lakers for the Lakers to get in. Then are you rooting for the Celtics?
No, because there has never been a schedule in the history of the NBA, or at least in my lifetime, where you close out a conference.
Huh?
There's never been a schedule in my lifetime where you close the season out of conference.
Oh. No, but I'm saying, like, if that game existed.
There ain't no if. There it doesn't exist.
But if it existed, it's a hypothetical question. It's a crazy, wild, specific hypothetical. You can't say even yes to that.
No.
So no with that as a technicality.
There's no technicality about it. It is
a technicality.
It would never happen. You would never see the Celtics play a Western Conference team to end a season to determine a playoff seed.
But if, Pete.
if I was 7 feet tall, I'd be the stretch five the Lakers are looking for. I mean, like, if what? Like,
all right, so what if you had a hypothetical son who played basketball for the Celtics, then what?
So it wouldn't happen. I would go full LeVar Ball and sabotage draft workouts. And UMFers aren't going to corner me on this. It's not happening. Sorry. Try harder next time. Merry Christmas.
He dropped the UMFers on the entire listening audience. This is what I was looking for. We ended with a laugh. Well, I ended with a laugh.
Yeah, you did.
You're not laughing.
I'm annoyed in a different way now. So thanks for that.
You know, it's kind of like Major Pain, right?
I loved Major Pain, yes.
It was incredible, right? But where like somebody got shot and he like broke their finger to take their mind off of the bullet wound in their All right, that'll do it for this episode and this week's episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. I do got to say something on our way out here. We had set a goal when it looked like it was potentially possible of reaching 5 million listens. We hit it on Christmas night. I just checked it, you know, this morning, and it happened like while I was sleeping on Christmas night. So 5 million listens for this show, given the fact that it started basically by accident. The very first iteration of this was a legitimate accident where I D'Angelo Russell'd four other guys who wanted to talk about basketball in a non-Twitter kind of situation. For it to grow from that to where it is now, and this 5 million listens where it currently is right now, that takes into account how crappy the end of last season was. Remember how bad, remember trying to talk our way through the end of last season?
Very depressing, yes.
It was awful. So hopefully this next year, 2020, why not shoot for the moon and try to, if you don't land on the moon, land on a star and we'll try to double it again. But man, you guys, I cannot thank you guys enough for the amount of support that you guys have given myself, Harrison back in the day, Pete, all of our other guests, even Matt Moore sometimes. Thank you guys a ton for everything that you guys have done, not just for me and the show, but for my family and I. I literally get to pay for my daughter's college one day with talking about the Lakers, and it's because of you. So thank you a ton for that. It was probably second best birthday gift. We actually got Avery to laugh consistently, and 5 million listens is cool and all, but that's just amazing. But thank you guys a ton for that. I'm absolutely speechless at all of this. It's been an incredible ride. I can't wait to see where it keeps on going. So have a great rest of your week. Make somebody else's, and we will talk to you tomorrow.